a lot of talk after Capitals win last night, forcing a Game 7, by the way, which is Wednesday on CBC Game 7 between the Penguins and Capitals. But a play where, you know, Sidney Crosby goes into the end boards. He'd missed a game with concussion after being cross-checked. Came back, goes into the second game back, goes into the boards last night. Now, you know, we all watched him struggle to get up. You know, as far as we know, everybody tells us there was no concussion. There was no concussion protocol. He wasn't looked at. I mean, you heard Doug McLean and Andrew Nye's update talk about that. A lot of people in hockey are wondering about that. And Steven, you know what? I was thinking about this morning and how to address this, and because we've talked about concussions in hockey for a long time. We're going to bring Merrick on in a few minutes to talk about it. But I'll tell you what, we really do spend a hell of a lot of time talking about something that we just don't know a great deal about when it comes to concussions, don't we?
It's
kind of concerning.
Well, I guess we know more than we know more than we knew 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. We certainly, the fact we're talking about it is probably a positive thing rather than a negative thing. But yeah, you do feel kind of like you're flying blind here. You know, I was talking to our Calgary brethren about this morning a little bit. You know, you really have no choice but to kind of accept the judgment of the people who are given, you know, who have the power to make a call here, right? You have no choice but to accept that doctors are operating ethically,
right,
that the protocol is being enforced, that observers are observing the same way they would observe in November or February or March, and that the player is, you know, because a lot of concussion stuff involves self-reporting,
mm-hmm,
right? It's not, you know, it's not like you come off the ice with your leg pointing sideways. You have to say, I don't feel right, or I feel nauseous, or my vision is blurred. If you know, it's not like somebody can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is where we get into the tricky part about this right now, because the great, you know, one of the foundational pieces when it comes to hockey is that hockey players, when the Stanley Cup is on the line, will do virtually. You know, Erik Karlsson is playing with a broken foot,
mm-hmm,
right? Bobby Bond scored the winning goal with a broken leg. Endless guys at the end of a playoff, you know, was it Joe Thornton with San Jose, right? It was held together with binder twine. That's what hockey players do, and that's what we celebrate about hockey players, that when they get cut, they don't come out of the game. Somebody just stitches them up with a needle and thread on the bench, and there they go. And, you know, so what we're saying now is, but don't do that. Don't think that way when it's a brain injury, because brain injuries are different, and they have implications that other injuries don't, and they don't heal the same way. And so we're going to turn that thinking on its head. And if you're a hockey player in the Stanley Cup playoffs and you're his coach, or you're the team doctor or the trainer, or you're the protocol guy, or you're the spotter from the league, and you see something that would cause you concern on a Tuesday night in November, but it's a May night in this, you know, second last round of the Stanley Cup, third last round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have got to take it seriously and react in a way that kind of goes against the entire culture of the sport. Well, and, you know, and I would hope that they would, mm-hmm, for all the good, you know, high-minded reasons that we... But, the, you know, the fact is, Jeff, if Sidney Crosby comes out in Game 7 and scores the game-winning goal, we're all going to high-five him.
Part of the problem is, and I think maybe those of us who covered sports for a long time, we're so conditioned to the whole team doctor idea that I don't think when it comes to concussions, we believe the team or they who are reporting it. And I know the NHL this year expanded its program to include concussion spotters, both in the arena and, in the league office, the player safety room in New York. And, they're charged with the responsibility of seeing or finding what they call visible signs following a direct or indirect blow to the head. So it's not necessarily they're only looking at a play if a guy goes barreling into the end boards. And I know people like Elliot Friedman on Twitter yesterday made the point that he was surprised that the concussion spotters didn't pull Crosby off the ice.
Me too. Yeah, everybody was.
And again, part of the issue here is I just don't, I think this is the way, I mean, I hate to say it, I think this is the way it's just always going to be, because I think we're naturally, we're skeptical.
Well, here, let's add another part of what, you know, again, one of the great givens about hockey and hockey culture is that you lie about injuries.
Right.
Right? No one tells the truth about injuries in hockey.
Nope. Certainly not during the playoffs.
Certainly not during the playoffs, and to a degree, not during even during the regular season, right? There's no, you know, no one steps up anymore and says, yeah, he's got, you know, a ligament damage in his ankle, or, you know, he's got an MCL problem, or he's got a slight shoulder separation. No one ever says that anymore. Mm-hmm. They say, well, humming, upper body, lower body, I'll be back sometime.
Yeah.
So you got a sport where people lie about injuries all the time, routinely, as a tactical advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of hard to sit back and think that there's full transparency when it comes to this particular kind of injury.
Let's bring in Jeff Merrick. He's host of Hockey Central in the NHL and Sportsnet. Jeff, just want to ask you about your view of that particular play and your take in that situation.
Yeah, I'm much like you guys are. I was surprised that, much like Elliot mentioned last night on Twitter, I was surprised that there wasn't a concussion spotter who right away should have said, this guy's not right. At the very minimum, should be pulled off the ice for testing. It's interesting. I'm not sure if you guys had a similar experience, but almost right after the hit, within, you know, minutes, with, you know, about a dozen minutes, I got texts from two friends of mine who have both gone, and they're not athletes, mind you, but they've gone through concussions and have had it severely affect their lives. And right away they texted me and said, Crosby's not right. I recognize what he's doing. I've been through that. I know that feeling. I see that look. He's not right, and he needs to be pulled off the ice. And I think further, Stephen, to your point as well about, you know, players not disclosing injuries, I think there's another layer to it, is that we trumpet this.
Yep.
As mm-hmm. if this is macho, this is, you know, warrior mentality. I mean, how many times, you know, do we have to see Ian LaPerriere blocking that Paul Martin shot with his face in the playoffs, or Gregory Campbell after breaking his leg on a broken on a block shot, hobble around on one leg, and that gets celebrated as this, you know, triumph of the spirit and triumph of the will, and that's what it takes to win. So I think that mentality is baked into the pie when it comes, and it's not just hockey, but I think that's baked into the pie, you know, with a lot of athletes at a very young age. You know, right now I'm at the gym, and the gym that I work out at, it's all hockey players, and usually in the morning, right now there's about half a dozen OHL kids in here, and that's dominating the conversation as well. I mean, everyone is talking about that, and everyone's talking about the injuries they played with, and it's almost like, you know, high five moments. You know, I played with this ankle injury, I played with this shoulder injury, and it's almost sort of a badge of honor amongst the athletes themselves. And then when you pull that up another level, you know, to our layer of media, you know, we salute this, and,
yep,
you know, this is thumbs up and way to go, boys. And let's, you know, blur the distinction between playing hurt and playing injured. And so I think that in a lot of it, it needs a full sort of review. And I don't think we can pull ourselves out of it and say that this is their problem, if we do indeed believe it's a problem, because if we do believe it's a problem, we're part of it as well.
Yeah, no, that's, look, you're right. And we kicked that around a little bit to off the top here, Jeff, that idea, you know, the kind of the mythology of the Bobby Bonds and, you know, and
right,
Eric Carlson this year and Joe Thornton this year and all of that stuff. But I guess here's the question. And again, that's deeply rooted both in the culture of the game and in the culture of people who watch the game. You're correct. It's part of what we celebrate. But look, I would be willing to bet every nickel I have that Sidney Crosby would not pull himself out of a play, even though he's achieved loads already. He's won two Stanley Cups. He's celebrated as one of the greatest players in the game. He'll go to the Hall of Fame. One of the greatest players in history, right? He's in the Pantheon.
Yep.
He's on Mount Rushmore. It's all done.
Yep. Yes.
But there's no chance he's pulling himself out of a playoff game. So someone else has to do it. Who's the someone else, and how do you make that work when there's so much self-reporting involved when it comes to head injuries?
Isn't that what concussion spotters are supposed to do? Isn't that the whole idea? Like that's what I thought. The one thing to me, this overriding storyline of the concussion spotter, remember that game earlier this season with Edmonton, Minnesota, where Connor McDavid tripped behind the net, hit his chin on the ice,
mm-hmm,
okay? This isn't a cross check in the head. This isn't an elbow. This isn't a shoulder. This isn't a, you know, a Rule 48 blind. He hit his chin on the ice, and he got pulled off. And we were told this was going to be the standard. I said to myself, wow, this is going to be the standard. The playoffs are going to be jump ball because who knows how many guys are going to get pulled off the ice. And we've seen some pretty wild situations and some big hits as well and some controversial plays and some plays where you kind of peer at, you know, through your finger cracks because you're scared to look at them with both your eyeballs. And I thought the Crosby play last night was that one as well, where I said to myself, to your point, Stephen, Crosby's not taking himself off the ice. There needs to be someone else who extends that hook and says, you need to come and sit down. You know, you need to come and, you know, you need to have a baseline check. And here's where, you know, the Crosby example is a fascinating one. And this is, and people have brought this up before. This is why Sidney Crosby, I think, should always be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy, is that he sets an incredibly high standard of athleticism and professionalism and pain tolerance. And that's part of what goes into making an athlete, that everybody else under Sidney Crosby is intimidated not to follow. Mm-hmm. Look what Crosby's doing. Look what Crosby's playing through. Look what he's come back at. Look at the level he's practicing at. I can't take a day off. I can't take a shift off because our leader, you know, the highest paid player on the team, the superstar, to your point, the bona fide Hall of Famer, he's set this standard that everybody else under him needs to hit. There's a positive athletic influence to that. And I also think there's a dangerous underside to that because to your earlier point, if Crosby's not going to pull himself out of the game, how's Rust? How's Sheary? How's Dumoulin? How's anybody else going to pull themselves off the ice when Crosby won't?
Well, you know, and my concern about this, well, there's two things, several concerns, but one, you know, Mike Sullivan and Sidney Crosby directly contradicted each other after the game, which is never a good look. But, you know, your point you just made, Jeff, I'm hoping, well, we all assume that the game is going to be refereed differently in the playoffs, and I'm kind of used to that, and in some levels I kind of see why it is, but I don't want the concussion spotters thinking they're being held to a different standard just because it's the playoffs.
I agree.
That would concern me.
I agree. It's dangerous both ways, because if there's a different standard in the playoffs, when you get a fiery situation, I mean, we've seen it with, you know, Anaheim and Edmonton, the times you can see it with the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Washington Capitals. The danger happens when you have a volatile situation and nobody really knows what the rules are period to period and what's allowed and what's not going to be called.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. But we understand that. We understand, you know, playoffs sure. happen and it's a little bit different and it becomes a little bit more, you know, the law of the jungle, if you will. Hudson Bay, it becomes different. We all understand that. The one consistent you do want, you know, that one, you know, the one element you want removed from that, hey boys, it's the playoffs, we understand we're going to play differently and it's going to be officiated differently, is that concussion spotter. I thought the concussion spotter in this year's playoffs was going to be a story. Not unlike, was it a few years ago, we had about a dozen too many men on the ice calls?
Yes.
In the first, I remember that. We were all going crazy. How many too many men on the ice calls are we going to have here? I thought that it was going to be similar to that, but by way of concussion spotter. And I guess last night is probably going to be the touchstone for all of this or the flashpoint moment. But I think that's the point of discussion that we'll all jump off of and ask ourselves the same question. Where are the concussion spotters when the stakes are the highest and the guys are playing the hardest? And I have a hard time believing that players are tending to their own safety out there.
Do you think the league should be, if you know, again, if you're going to take some of the take authority away from people on the ice, or authority away from team doctors, or authority away from coaches, do you think the league should be compelled to explain decisions that are made or not made? And again, I'm thinking not just about this, but about video review as well. Should they be compelled? You know, if you're going to ask the question, how come Sidney Crosby didn't come off the ice, or how come that wasn't goaltender interference? Shouldn't somebody have to stand up and say, this is why?
Different with the concussions and the goalie interference. I am always in favor of officials, or whether it's, you know, not it doesn't even have to be the officials on the ice. It could be the supervisor of the series. It could be even Stephen Walkham, who explains why certain calls are made. I understand that can get that can be a real slippery slope and completely distract from the game, and where there's an assumption that all hockey players aren't perfect, we do have an assumption that officials are, and I think that's wrong. The concussion spotter wanted to know, why didn't he get pulled off the ice? I mean, speaking personally, someone that has seen friends go through this, someone who is a fan of the game and doesn't want athletes to have to go through this, I would like to see explanations to why concussion spotters didn't pull certain players off the ice. I just don't think that the NHL wants to have that dialogue especially not right now where there's a very serious lawsuit underway.
Well, it would also open an awful lot of insurance issues, I would think, for the league.
Totally.
If you came out with an explanation and then this doesn't make it right, but if you came out with an explanation and then 2 days later the player you're talking about passes out on the bench,
But presumably at that point, if you're explaining inaction, it's way tougher. Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
If you're explaining inaction,
right.
You can say, look, we relied on, the medical people we brought in to do this. And in their judgment, their independent judgment, this decision was made. The tricky part's when you don't do it.
I'll tell you what. There have been so many times during the regular season. There was one Montreal-Chicago game where Shea Weber hit Corey Crawford with a slap shot right between the eyes. And he went down like he was doing the Nestle plunge. And I thought, wow, concussion spot. I don't know how you absorb 110-mile-an-hour slap shot or wherever he fired it at between the lookers and not go off to get checked. And he went down like he was, backsliding into a pool. And he didn't get pulled off. And I'm still very much of the mind that whenever I see a goaltender take a slap shot in the head, I don't know how they don't get pulled off right away. Mm-hmm. Having said all that, I've talked to Dr. Ali Rendley, who I think she's at Western or St. Mike's right now, has talked to me countless times about this. She worked with Dr. Charles Tater last summer in neuroscience. And she said to me, you hockey guys have it all wrong about concussions. I said, what do you mean? She says, you just think that concussions happen when you get hit in the head. She says, I treat more people for concussions that get hit in the stomach than I do in the head. All that has to happen is your brain has to rattle.
Yeah.
So whether it's clean body, it doesn't always have to be that shoulder to the head, that elbow to the head, that punch to the head, that slap shot to the goalie mask that triggers a concussion. I think in a lot of plays, clean body check, shoulder to the chest, a bump from behind, that can induce a concussion as well. So I think there's probably more that are occurring that are not being diagnosed because we are so fixated on body part hitting the head, and that's the only thing that produces a concussion when all the evidence that we had shows otherwise.
But, that doesn't mean the other things don't cause. Like, again, I still think if you get hit between the eyes with a 100-mile-an-hour slap shot, somebody should look at you.
So, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Well, and I think one of the issues is we have a game that's going, 35 miles an hour, right? And that turns a contact sport into a collision sport. Now, there is less hitting, but the hitting is more violent now because they're going at speeds that we've never seen before. And, I don't want to sound like, Ralph Nader here, unsafe at any speed. But at a certain point, don't we have to say to ourselves that this is not going to be a safe game if you play it at this speed?
Mm-hmm.
We all love the fly zone NHL, and it's great, and they're up and down the ice. Wow, it's so fast. But there's a dark underbelly to that in that, the play is moving so quickly. Bodies are going to be in concert and pretzel with one another, and there are going to be some serious injuries because of it. And I think part of the problem is, and we all love the speed, but don't we have to accept that speed is one of the issues with this sport?
But,
if we're saying there's an issue at all.
The other element here, though, Jeff, is that if we're going to accept that this is for the good of the game and the good of the players and the good of everyone, you also have to accept that sometimes this is going to affect the competitive balance. Right, that sometimes that you could decide a Stanley Cup for this reason. And that's got to be on the table, because if it's not on the table, it doesn't mean anything. And that's, I wonder, that's kind of where this whole conversation is leading.
What's fascinating, too, is, and you can see it, with, various coaches, John Tortorella, Mike Babcock, pick them. When a player gets taken off the ice for concussion protocol and that coach is asked about it afterwards, even though they all try to say the right thing, you can see the frustration and you can sense it because they still have that, they took my guy off the ice and how dare they? They're not on the ice. They're not, wait for it, they're not hockey people. It's like there still is that us and them mentality that if you haven't got on the ice, you have no sort of jurisdiction to decide, who should stay on the ice and who should come off the ice. There's still very much that us and them mentality. How dare this doctor tell us that my guy's not okay?
Shifting focus a little bit to the actual playing of the game itself. I don't know if that sounds right, but Jeff, Washington looks like they may be in the process of vanquishing some ghosts.
Yeah.
What does Pittsburgh have to do in game seven? Or are they just, is this an example of all those injuries and all those missed shifts catching up to them?
I always defer to blue lines. You know, when I look at the playoffs, I always look at blue lines, and I say, you know, which team has the best blue line, the blue line that can transition the puck better than anybody else. And listen, in this series, even though it didn't look so at the outset of it, you know, the answer is Washington. And the one thing the Pittsburgh Penguins have always been able to do, and they did this last year en route to winning the Stanley Cup, is they've been able to disrupt a breakout. They've held the blue line. They've had a defenseman drop down, not a body check, but just a stick in the way. They've always been able to get in the way of teams as they try to break out so the reloading forward can come back to the neutral zone and slow down the forecheck. That's how they beat the San Jose Sharks, right? Mm-hmm. They did that against Columbus. They're able to do that against the Washington Capitals. But I do worry now, and maybe the final straw is the Trevor Daley injury that just made that blue line too thin. But you look at last night's game, did you see Pittsburgh disrupt anything?
No.
Nothing at all. And that's always been Pittsburgh's game. And we focus so much on, you know, Mike Sullivan's idea of letting certain players get out of their own zone quickly, you know, cheat on the play a little bit. Hey, there goes Kessel. There goes Hagelin. Crosby's gone. Breakaway pass. But to me, the way the Pittsburgh Penguins have always been successful is by disrupting breakouts and then not allowing teams to gather speed in the neutral zone. And did they ever look like they gave out free pass after free pass last night to the Washington Capitals. And that's a recipe for death when you have a balanced attack like Washington does. Like, with all due respect, you know, down the middle, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins are a murderer's row. It's fantastic. On the wings, it gets a little bit thin. But if you go player for player between the Capitals lineup and this year's addition of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you go depth down the wing and down the middle, certainly on the blue line, the Washington Capitals should win this thing. And I think over the past couple of games, and we'll see what happens in game seven, it looks like, you know, that talent is now taking over. And I do wonder to reiterate, if the Trevor Daley injury, that's the final straw. Mm-hmm. Because him and Mata really, you know, played a lot better in these playoffs than a lot of people gave them credit for. You're right about vanquishing ghosts, because this has always been the Achilles for the Washington Capitals. Hopefully, if it does happen, we can start to, you know, get rid of the lazy narrative of Ovechkin not being the winner and you can't win with this guy, which we used to talk about Steve Yzerman like that, and we can all finally move on. But this is a tall task now for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Crosby still doesn't look right. The blue line is hurting, and the injuries are piling up, and they're not disrupting the breakout of the Washington Capitals. That's a recipe for disaster if you're a Penguins fan.
You know, all of that makes perfect sense, Jeff, and you're right about the Ovechkin thing being a lazy narrative, but you know that if Washington wins this series, a lot of people are going to point to the fact that Barry Trotz decided they couldn't ride Ovechkin as, you know, as a first line guy, and that they're going to let other guys win it for them. You know, that's still going to come back to that in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, that they moved him down with Eller and Wilson.
Yeah.
Even though it's funny too, because all you have to do is sort of, you know, peel away the statistics, and you know, you look at the Washington Capitals in the Ovechkin era in the playoffs, and measure him up against any other player on the team in this era, and he far outstrips him by way of production. And the other interesting thing about it is too, you can count on one hand the amount of players on the wing that can affect change in a game. I mean, centers certainly can, blue liners can. It is incredibly difficult to be a complete difference maker as a winger, as opposed to being a center, a goaltender, or a defenseman. So I think that there's some sort of positional bias involved as well.
Jeff, we're going to let you run and continue your workout. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.